The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, February 15th, 2015. We are part of the shows on 1240 AM WGBB, broadcasting live from West Babylon, Long Island. I am your host for the first hour, Gary Harding, and alongside, of course, is my tag team partner, John Panarese, wearing his Islanders garb as well as mine wearing mine, and Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. We got to get him an Islander jersey. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
We got to get him in this.
I'll take it.
Yeah, sure. We got a busy show tonight. In the first half hour, Hockey Night in Canada analyst and as well as former New York Islander, New York Ranger Glenn Healy will be joining us to talk about his thoughts on the last season of the Islanders. What's going on in Toronto? A lot of things. Looking forward to a very spirited conversation. And in the second half hour, we'll be talking to Randy Gorman, who is a WHL and BCJHL scout for McKeeson's Hockey. We're going to talk about the upcoming NHL draft. Of course, the big Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel conversation. For those of you who don't know, those are going to be the two top prospects in next year's NHL draft. And we'll talk a little bit about the prospects from the local teams. So, John, four in a row again.
Once again. Rebounding and not the most pretty wins. Certainly more the uglier wins this season.
No, exactly. But as we said all along this season, a good team will always find a way to get a win. And they did that with Edmonton. They held on. Toronto gave them a little scare in the second period. They had a little timeout, which is obviously what most people were saying in the press box and around the stands. It's very unusual for Jack Capuano to call a timeout. But he did.
Right.
You know, so everybody realizes he's still alive. And then, of course, last night, a great third period against the Columbus Blue Jackets, gets themselves back to a fourth straight win. And, of course, they're facing that lovely team from 33rd and 7th.
Crosstown rivals.
The crosstown rivals. This is going to be huge. Obviously, you know, the injury to Henrik Lundqvist has been big. Cam Talbot has done a very nice job filling in. But the question is going to be, is he going to be able to play every game?
Right.
The stretch. You know, they got that kid from Hartford. I can't even pronounce his name, and I'm not even going to try, as the backup. And you're going to wonder if he's going to get a game in, or is Glenn Sather going to make a move to get themselves a veteran netminder to cover the tracks for the couple of weeks.
I would have thought they would have went after Enroth if he was available.
Yeah. I mean, that trade was pretty interesting, too, with Buffalo starting to unload. Obviously, Evander Kane, who some people on Islander boards were saying he was going to come here, and I'm like, I was ready to get sick.
No.
But obviously he went to Buffalo with Zach Bogosian. I think a pretty good trade on both sides. And, you know, if Ted Nolan keeps his job next year, which is unsure, we're not really sure if he's going to be able to hold on. There's been some mutterings between the GM and the coach, and I think Ted Nolan is the perfect guy to work on Evander Kane and also Brian Trotsche. I mean, those are two class guys. Those are guys that can, you know, turn a career around for certain players.
Right.
And
I think
those are the ones that can do it. I really do. So we're not going to take any calls tonight, unfortunately, because I know some people are asking, but you know, we're only on an hour tonight. Last week we were on for 2 hours.
That's right.
You know, I was almost wondering what to say at some point, but you know, Derek kind of, you know, he can lead things.
Derek can carry the whole 2 hours.
And by the way, we want to wish Derek Wasiak a happy birthday.
That's
yesterday.
Right.
Yesterday he celebrated his ex-birthday. And obviously also last night was Valentine's Day. Hopefully everybody had a good time with their significant others. And as far as myself, you know, that was my anniversary. So I was married 9 years ago yesterday. And Claire and I had a nice night enjoying the Islander victory. And, of course, you know, she's a big Josh Bailey fan.
So
she was very happy that he got 2 goals last night. You know, hopefully we were going to have a hat trick. It didn't happen.
He came close.
I mean, you know, I totally blew my mind until this morning when I looked at the paper, saw that Anders Lee had 4 assists last night.
I didn't realize that either. I knew he had a few. I didn't realize he had 4.
He's had 10 all year, and he had 4 in one night.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that line was just incredible. They were absolutely amazing. Did everything they needed to do, and there was no answer for him. I mean, no matter what Columbus put out there, there was no stopping Tavares. And you know, I mean, he's that type of player. You could see it when he's on his game and there's something he wants. And it was funny, you know, watching from the press box on Thursday night at the Maple Leaf game, it just blew my mind on how much
the focus was on his eyes. It was like he was beating. You know, it was like he just wanted to do everything he could, you know, to give it back to his hometown team. And it, unfortunately, it just didn't happen for him. But, you know, again, the win is the win.
That's it. Two points in the standings.
You know, I mean, 37-18-1 right now after 56 games, 75 points. You know, they've matched their season win total right now at 37. Halak got his 30th win last night, and he's one away, or 31st, I should say. He's one away from tying the Islander record at 32, you know, with 25 games left. You know, it's incredible. So, anyway, I think we're getting our host, our guest coming in right now. Oh, he's making we got to make a couple minutes more here. But if you know, and we'll talk about it with Glenn when he comes on. But as I was telling you before we came on the air, Toronto is starting to clean their house.
Yeah.
Mike Santarelli and Cody Franson were traded from the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Nashville Predators, who right now are sitting on top of the NHL with 82 points right now. I think they were traded for a first-round pick and some stuff. So, obviously, Brendan Shanahan's going to start getting busy to basically relieve the Toronto Maple Leafs of most of their talent. You know, they look like they're going to completely start afresh. But you know what, John? No matter what happens with the Maple Leafs, they are Canada's team. It's like the Dallas Cowboys. You're not going to be able to not get a ticket for a game. You know, it's going to be the hottest thing. And, you know, no doubt about it, they're going to be it's going to take them a couple of years to rebuild themselves. But
and they started off the season doing pretty well, and all of a sudden they just hit the skids.
Yeah, I really don't know. And we'll have to ask Glenn about that and as to what happened that caused that free fall to happen. You know, very very interesting story, but we'll see what happens. And again, our guest is on the line, and John, I got to bring this story up because this is a very special guest for me. When I first became a season ticket holder to the Islanders, before I got my ticket, my actual seats, they put me down in the lower seats one night, and it was against the LA Kings, and it was against Kelly Rudy, and I'm sitting in the first row in section 117 or 118 for the national anthem, and I'm wearing a black Kelly Rudy jersey, LA Kings. And I turn around, and Glenn Healy is not in the lineup that night. And he basically gives me a raspberry. Okay? And I quickly take the jersey off and show my Islander T-shirt that was on underneath. And I get the thumbs up. And I'm like, okay, I'm all right. So, but a few days later, I went out and got myself a Glenn Healy jersey. And I know he told me that night that it was the first Islander Healy jersey he saw. And that gentleman is joining us on the line from Toronto. Glenn Healy, it's Gary Harding and John Panarese on Sports Talk 1240. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Gentlemen, thank you for finally coming to your senses. Kelly Rudy, who's he?
Yeah, I know, and believe me, you really...
Blue ponytail, long hair, had a mullet till he was like, what, 42?
Yeah, he only cut it last year, didn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's got the comb over.
Yeah, exactly.
So instead of it being, you know, kind of parted or departed, he's combed it over. Thank goodness you came to your senses.
Yes,
those
I did.
Were good times.
I did. It was a lot. It was a lot of fun. I mean, and again, just going to that as we've been talking to a bunch of others regarding the last season here at the Coliseum. What was your impressions of coming to Long Island? I mean, obviously, you know, playing the first couple of years in the Kings, all you probably noticed was the Coliseum and the Marriott. So what were your impressions your first year here on Long Island?
Well, I was kind of shocked when I first got there. I can remember driving there my very first year and thinking, this is kind of pretty. This is cute, right? You had all the different little boroughs, you know, Northport, Centerport, Huntington, and I thought it was gorgeous. And I thought, that's not what I expected. I mean, I expected, like, city. And then I can, like, to this day, still remember the very first game, Islanders-Rangers, and I was sitting beside Jeff Norton, and I could hear this, like, just pounding sound. And I said to Norty, I said, what's that noise? He goes, oh, that's the fans. They're here. They're ready to support the group.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was like, you got to be kidding me. Went on the ice. I think we tied 3-3 that night. It was a really, really good game. But from that moment, I was hooked. I was all in. This is the Islander group that I want to be part of. And boy, it mounted from there. So the very last year that I played, when we beat Pittsburgh and David Volek scored that big goal, and it was just a fantastic moment where people were sleeping over to get tickets, where that low ceiling in Nassau Coliseum, where it just the whole building shakes when you score a goal, just fantastic moments. And I know that the guys that played with the Islanders, the Billy Carrolls and that group, they're all planning. They're coming back for that last game.
Wow.
It means that much to that group to come back, bring everyone back, and to watch the very last game that will be played in that building. It might, they don't know when it's going to be, but from a regular season standpoint, they're all coming back. And so that kind of tells you what the players think of the fans, the fan base, and the group that's followed the New York Islanders.
Now, obviously, probably when people, as your tenure on playing as an Islander, the 93 series, which you just sort of alluded to before, probably stands out in people's minds. And I kind of I remember the David Volek goal. I remember being
you better.
Yeah, I was actually at a friend's house, and we just went so nuts that his neighbor actually called, thought that something was wrong. That's how loud we got when Volek scored. But what is your, what's your fondest memory or the thing that might stand out the most from that series, other than obviously David's goal?
Well, I think it kind of all kind of comes around together in the sense that, you had Al Arbour, who to me is maybe one of the best men in hockey I've ever met. He was like a dad, to all of us. And here we are, we're playing against the Pittsburgh Penguins, two-time Stanley Cup champs. They won 16 in a row to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs. They were a dynasty in every way. They had everything covered. You could check it off, right, whether it was, Rick Tocchet or Mario Lemieux or Ron Francis or like, go down the list. You look at the team. And Al Arbour, before we played that series, we didn't have Pierre Turgeon because he was hit about 45 seconds after he scored the goal against Washington.
Right, right.
And Al kind of sat in the middle of the room, and he put a chair down, and he sat down, and he looked at each one of us, and he went to Pat Flatley, who was the captain, and he looked at him, and he said, "Can you tie one shift against Mario Lemieux?" And Flats looked at him and said, "No, absolutely, I can tie one shift against him." Yeah. And he went to Ray Ferraro, "Can you tie one shift? Just tie. Don't win. Just tie." And he went through the whole locker room, and as he got through it, he went, "Okay, first period's done. Now, second period, Pat Flatley, can you tie one shift against Mario Lemieux?" And it was a long process. And he got to the end, and he said, "Now at the end, boys, all we have to do is win one single shift against Mario Lemieux. That's all we got to do. Can we do it?" And we were out of the blocks in a heartbeat because, we knew we could do that. And it came down to that. It was one shift, game seven, overtime, and realistically, we won one shift against Mario
Lemieux. Yeah, pretty much.
And Al Arbour, to me, is probably the best man in hockey I've ever met. And probably, look at him as like a second dad.
I wouldn't doubt it. There's not many people that could even come up with even one tenth of a bad word to say about that man. And again, we wish him all the best as he's convalescing in Florida right now. But obviously, the magic run ended, with the Montreal Canadiens, and I still say that the hockey gods forgot about the fact that in game three, that the end of game three that night at the Coliseum, that there were 11 Canadiens on the ice when they scored that goal in overtime on you. But anyway,
I thought there was 12.
Yeah. But anyway, obviously, and I know you told the story with Shannon Hogan when you were in Montreal when the Islanders were in town there, about the fact that you were on vacation with everybody and found out that you were traded basically 9,000 miles in a matter of one day, and you didn't even know about it, which is a strange feeling. But my wife is listening right now, and I know that she, that first night that you guys came in as the Rangers coming into town, that she put up a sign saying, although you're bleeding Ranger blue, you know, we'll always remember you. And she's got a, again, she's got a big lump in her heart for you, you know, for your career here on the island as well as I do. And you know us well enough. But just describe that moment, you know, when you were coming in as the enemy, you know, being that you loved, you know, the island so much and were so fond of the fans and everything else and the story that happened the year before. But to come back in that October wearing the other colors.
Well, I felt so strange because I had no control. It was, you know, a moment that happened, you're right, as I was in Ireland. I was with Pat Flatley and a bunch of the guys from the Islanders. We, you know, kind of rented a place up in the west coast of Ireland. This was, you believe this, pre-cell phone?
Yeah, right.
No one had a cell phone. And I was traded a number of times and had no idea I was being dealt. It was only because Pat called his mom to check in to make sure everything was okay. And he actually made her go get the newspaper and read it to him word by word because he couldn't believe it. But it happened. And, you know, that whole group, you know, we were going through a real transitional stage where the ownership was changing, management was changing. You know, Al Arbor was on his way out. Bill Torrey was on his way out. And it was kind of sad in a lot of ways because, you know, I really looked at that group. We were so young on the back end in defense. We were so young up front, but yet we had so much promise.
Definitely.
And we had no fear. We just played. And Al was our leader, and it was a kind of a magical group of players that just played with determination and heart and courage. And it ended, you know, for me in the summer, had, you know, no idea it was going to end. And you know, I kind of had an idea. We had a year-end bash at an Italian restaurant in Huntington. And Pat Flatley wrote down my contractual demands on a piece of paper and gave it to the owners. And when the one owner ripped it up, put it in a ball, and threw it at me, I kind of knew that I probably wasn't going to be there the next year.
Jeez.
That being said, it was sad to break that group up because there was so much promise with a young group of guys that were brash and bold and led by a real kind of leadership group with Bill Torrey and Al Arbor.
It still kills me to think about that. I mean, that team just, it was, you know, just give it a couple more seasons and who knows what would have happened. But there you turn out, you end up on the Rangers and you end up, you know, winning the Stanley Cup with them.
Sorry. Is that okay to say that?
Yeah. It's okay. It's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, we are talking about you.
Is it okay to say it?
21 years after now, the wound is, you know, it's healed a little bit.
But you know, the experience playing as a Ranger, you know, compared to, I'm not saying compared, but how was it different and what do you remember from that experience?
Well, I remember the very first practice that I had with the Rangers and, it, you know, showed up in New York and I had no idea and I was like an absolute traitor. Who goes from the Islanders to the Rangers? But nobody, right? And, you know, you don't have any call on this, but you've done it, and you get there. And I remember the first practice, and I said to my wife, I said, "We're going to win the Stanley Cup with this group. They're that good." You know, things happened the last year that just weren't right, but I can tell you that this team has got all of the mix. That's a really good group, and you know, I certainly didn't like my time with Mike Keenan, but I love the fact that we had a dynamite team. And in some ways, you know, I don't think with the group we had in Long Island, we would have won a Stanley Cup if Al Arbor was going to leave and if Bill Torrey was going to leave. But I kind of felt that we had a chance at a Stanley Cup with that Ranger group. And sure enough, that next year we erased three generations of misery and had a Stanley Cup for, you know, a group that hadn't seen a championship in 54 years. So sometimes I guess things happen for a reason, and it really happened for a reason.
Well, again, for your career, I mean, you know, that's just the icing of a cake for somebody's career to know that your name is going to be permanently
on that
trophy. And, you know, you can't deny that for anybody, you know, regardless of what team it is, even if it is them.
Yeah, I think the most memorable thing was just the fact that there were three generations of fans that had not seen a championship. And, you know, that kind of, you know, chance of making it happen, being the team that wins the championship, that erases the ghosts of 1940 and all the stuff that goes along with it. It was, certainly something that was quite memorable to me. And one of the reasons I signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because I thought I could do it here. I thought I could do it in Toronto.
And of course, being in your hometown, right? But I was just going to say, at least we're not Chicago Cub fans. At least you're not waiting 110 years. But now let's move to today. Obviously, you are, as I try to explain to people, I say you are the Canadian version of Pierre Maguire. Obviously, behind the glass, most times doing the Hockey Night in Canada games.
Can you apologize for the fans for that, please?
Yeah. Well, they all have their crosses to bear, but. Anyway, I was just telling John, because unfortunately he's been out of tune all day, but we obviously know what's going on with the Toronto Maple Leafs. One win in their last 14, and the announcement came a couple of days ago that the house is being officially cleaned, and I guess Shanny made the first move this afternoon, trading Santarelli and Cody Franson to the Nashville Predators. I didn't see who it was for, but being a Toronto resident and, I'm sure obviously being a kid and following, the blue and white and ending your career in blue and white, it's got to be tough to see a team that's going to get decimated the way it's going to be now.
Yeah, particularly when, the years that I played in Toronto, we were one step away three times going to the Stanley Cup final. We were one tied only elbow away from beating New Jersey and going to the final.
And do you remind him of that, too?
All the time.
Okay, good.
He doesn't remember it, though. He still thinks that Niedermeyer had the puck, even though he hadn't had it for 40 seconds. Three times to almost be there that you don't quite get it done. Those are kind of sad moments when you reflect on them, but then they're proud moments in the fact that, I look at a Pat Quinn who was just passed away, and I thought, other than Al Arbor, what a fantastic person to kind of lead you down that path.
He was an absolute gentleman to talk to, I will say that. I've had
so
a couple
fantastic.
Conversations. Yep.
All the years that he was in Toronto, there was no other coach in hockey that coached more playoff games than Al, and I was part of those playoff games. And so that's kind of a really memorable thing that, I look back on. You take the chance. You want to say, I'm going to be the guy who makes a difference and, kind of ends this three generation of misery that where we could win a cup. And that was the chance we took in New York, and the chance paid off. And it didn't pay off in Toronto. I can tell you, though, that whoever is part of that group that wins the championship, it'll be something more memorable than anything they've ever gone through in their entire life. And I look back at the times that I played with the Leafs, and I look at the guys that, kind of paved the road for me, the Dave Keons, the Johnny Bowers, the George Armstrongs. They paved the road. I drove on it.
Right.
The crowd was full, not because of me. It was full because of them.
Because of the blue and white
and
everything.
And likewise with the Islanders. It was full, not because of me. It was Brian Trotsche, Billy Smith, Nystrom, like all the Bossy, all those guys, they paved the road so that the next group of Islanders could drive on it. And so you always have to think about that. You've got to honor the past, remember what those guys have gone through, and the next group that plays in Toronto that wins the championship, oh boy.
I can imagine. It's a great sport.
Something for the ages.
Yep. John.
Okay, well, you just brought up the current Islanders, so I have to ask you how much you've gotten to see of the current Islanders and what's some of your thoughts?
Lots. And, I'm going to take you back to a time when John Tavares was playing with the Oshawa Generals. And we used to do this kind of little thing up in Toronto where you'd bring all these kids out of schools that were mentally challenged, and you'd have a hockey tournament. One school, and the entire school would get out to watch them play. There'd be about 1,000 kids watching these kids play a game of ball hockey. And, we would bring out all the stars, the celebs, Jeff Bookaboom, Glenn Healy, really, who cares? But anyways, bring us all out.
We care.
And we'd do the opening face-off. We'd drop the puck. We'd do the pictures. And I can remember looking over and saying, is that John Tavares across from me? It is. And I walked over and I kind of introduced myself because I didn't know him. He was playing with the Oxford Generals, and he said, "Yeah, I'm John, and I'm, you know, coaching Henry Street, you know, high school hockey team." And I said, "Well, come on, take part of the pictures." "No, no, it's fine. I don't need it. I am just here to coach my team." And I was a fan the minute I heard that. Like, this guy was all about, you know, all those things that were most important in life and not the things that weren't important in life. Mm-hmm. And you know, they drafted him in Montreal that year in 2009. And they wanted to bring him back to the Coliseum and parade him in. The Coliseum was full. But I knew at that moment that the team was in pretty good hands, that they had now the next leader that was going to take them through it. So I'm a big fan of the team, Gar Snow, the coaching staff, all of it. I'm all on board and proud and hoping that they do really well.
And just speaking of that, I mean, obviously, you know, the Islanders moving to Brooklyn next season. Have you gotten any word from anybody about the about what it's been like for them, you know, to go into an arena that's not going to be a hockey-based arena?
Especially. Well, it's kind of sad. It is, you know, to leave Long Island, to leave the Coliseum. And shame on the politicians for not being able to figure a way out.
Oh, Glenn, where were you years ago?
You know, shame on them. Yeah. Because, you know, the team will move. And, you know, unfortunately, the economics of hockey, you hate talking about salary caps and all the garbage that fans don't care about. We care about people. We care about stars. We care about John Tavares. We care about Kyle Okposo. We care about those kind of stories. But unfortunately, when you get the cap climbing up to $70 million and $80 million and, you know, probably in 5 years, $90 million, those are real factors for owners. And so, unfortunately, that hockey club has to move to Brooklyn. It has to. I mean, I have worked for the Players Association. I've seen the books. I've seen what clubs have to go through painfully. And they're going to have to go through that. They're going to have to move so that they can stay financially viable playing the NHL. But shame on the politicians, because they're going to miss that team. The fans are going to miss that team. And unfortunately for the fan base, which that's all that matters. Fans are all, they've made the New York Islanders. It's difficult for them to kind of look at it and go, why? And for me, it's difficult to look at it and go, why as well?
Yeah, exactly. from that time 20 plus years ago when I was starting to attend games on a regular basis to now, my season ticket career unfortunately is ending this year, and it's really sad. I mean, but I'm glad they're still here, or they're still going to be in the New York area, but you know, to come home at midnight after a game as opposed to like 10:15, 10:20, because I live up in Huntington, and you know, it's just going to be absolutely crazy. But anyway, so what else is – so just to end the show, I got to bring this up, because last month we had – or 2 months ago, we had Jigs McDonald on – actually, no, last month we had Jigs McDonald on the show, and it happened to be the night after you talked to Shannon Hogan.
Yes.
And – when I said to Jigs, I said, I don't know if you got to hear the report last night, but Glenn basically gave you a lot of kudos for him getting into the broadcasting career. And very truthfully, I got 10 seconds of radio silence.
Yeah, it was strange.
So you got to give us a little bit more kudos, go more into that story.
Well, it was funny, because I did the game last night in Montreal, and I'm watching Christian Thomas.
Right, play. Stevie's kid.
Thomas's son. Really good player, young guy, just kind of cutting his teeth. And my memories of Steve Thomas with the Islanders, he severed my finger. I lost the tip of my finger in a practice.
Wow.
Put it in a cup, and I had, not to take the fans away from the radio, but I had to go get it sewn back on. And anyways, that was it for me for that season. I was done.
Right.
And so Sportsnet and Jigs said, well, put him on the radio. Put him on TV. We'll see what he can do. And that was the start of my
Wow.
TV.
Wow. That's great. Okay.
So and Jigs was fantastic. He could not have set me up better. It was from the ladies' tees with, like, a lob ball. And I could not have either struck out or hit it worse. I was absolutely terrible. And from that moment on, I thought, okay, it's going to be really difficult if I'm going to do this TV thing. But it was the start for me, and that was Jigs. And it was 18. Eddie set me up nice, and mm-hmm. I tell you, I look back on that and I say that probably was the start. And I knew, number one, I had to do some work. Number two, I had to prepare a little bit. But you know, looking back at it now, and I've been retired since 2001, it's been 13 years of Hockey Night in Canada. So I'm going to give full marks to Jigs and full marks to 18 and Eddie Westfall and Jigs. Thanks very much. You set a pretty good table for
me. Well, I'm going to actually make sure I just sent a message to him on Facebook saying I'm talking about it, so I'll make sure he listens. But, you know, it's funny. He was our first interview when we came on in August of 2013. So, I mean, we're almost kinshiped in that.
Yeah,
but,
definitely is.
But anyway, Glenn, you know, I'm actually – I should have tried to tell you we have a webcam, and actually somebody goes on to our Sports Talk 1240 website. I'm actually wearing your jersey from your first year. Complete with the blood stains that you got on the Islander logo, by the way. So,
well, I had a few of those.
Yes, you did. With that bird cage, absolutely.
It was just terrible. Anytime I got hit, here you go, that's 10, there's 12, there's 15. So you knew you were getting stitches. It's just where you were getting.
But again, you know, my becoming an Islander fan and getting into it a great deal, I owe it a lot to you. You were always very good with the Booster Club and with us. You know, whenever we were in a different city, we were glad to get to talk to you. And again, this has just been an absolute thrill for me
to spend
20 minutes with you. And again, wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll catch up again down the road.
Well, I'm looking forward to following the Islanders long and deep into the playoffs. And probably one of the proudest moments.
And if Hockey Night in Canada comes in, I definitely owe you a beer and we'll catch up.
Wear that bloody jersey and away we go.
Amen, brother. Glenn, thanks again and have a great Sunday and thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. All right, so we're going to come back in our next segment with Randy Gorman from McKeeson's Hockey. You're listening to 1240 WGBB.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune into Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Hey, and we're back with Sports Talk 1240 again. This show is proudly sponsored by Country Foot Care in Mineola and East Williston. The doctors at Country Foot Care offer holistic conservative treatment options backed by many years of education and experience.
For your convenience, they carry a full line of products to enhance your customized treatment plan and some just to pamper your feet a little bit. You can contact them at 516-741-FEET or go to countryfootcare.com. And we just want to let you know that our show, John and I show, is getting a second sponsor, believe it or not. Yes, Harbor Beverage Merchants on New York Avenue in Huntington. Just opened up in the last few months. It's a great place to get some great craft beers, and they have a lot of growler stations with a lot of different choices. And now that I've actually been able to start drinking a little beer, because I haven't been able to with the weight loss and stuff, it's a great place to go check out. So if you're in the Huntington area, make sure you give them a shout. And if you want to call them, they're at 631-427-1600. You can go to harborbeverage.com. They're also on Facebook. Definitely check them out. It's a great place to get your beverages before the hockey game. Well, that just was one of the best interviews I've ever done, and I can't thank Glenn Healy enough, and I know my wife is probably listening right now going, yeah, he'll be on Cloud 10 for a while. anyway, so we got our second guest coming on the line. Like I said, sorry, folks, we're not taking phone calls tonight because we're going to have our next guest on for the next 20 minutes of the show. His name is Randy Gorman, and he does some scouting for McKeeson's Hockey, specifically in the Western Hockey British Columbia area, and he's a very good expert on the upcoming draft, which many of us local hockey fans should get involved in. Get ready to talk about it in the next couple of months. Randy, this is Gary and John on Sports Talk 1240 WGB. Glad to have you on from lovely Vancouver, British Columbia on this Sunday afternoon and night.
Hey, well, it's great to be here, Gary.
All right, thanks. So just getting off the start of the bat, I appreciate you sending me the actual updated list of the top 75. I've been looking at it, and obviously to most good hockey fans, obviously the initial debate right now is the Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel saga. Who's going to be number one? Who's going to be number two? Obviously, McDavid had a great start and unfortunately lost about 4 weeks of time getting into a little pugilistic tendencies. And has that four-week delay stunted his growth a little bit, or is he still considered the right now the number one prospect for the draft?
Well, we have him number one at McKean's, but I'll just touch on what you said, Gary. Yeah, he got into the fisticuffs there in a game in the OHL, and, you know, it was remarkable that he was able to get himself healed up in time to play in the showcase here in their Christmas New Year's area with the World Junior Championships for Team Canada. And that's where he really took off and shined. He has the ability, you know, he's an extremely gifted player, obviously, you know, and he can seemingly do it all at both ends of the ice. I mean, he's a great skater, a great playmaker. I mean, he uses his vision to set up teammates. I mean, he threads the needle on some pucks where some guys wouldn't be able to do that. And, you know, on some of his passes, he's just phenomenal with his vision. I mean, he has the ability to always be a factor every shift he's on the ice. And people have remarked about that, the similarities. Some people, you know, making comparisons to Gretzky, Joe Sakic. But, I mean, I think it's unfair to make comparisons to those great players. He hasn't played a game in the NHL yet. But I think he's really taken – that tournament he really took off and showcased himself. And the ability, like I said, to come back from that injury and to come right into that tournament with all the pressure and all the eyes on him and Jack Eichel – and to really to shine is quite something to do.
Well, we'll get back to Jack Eichel, but one of the names that jumped out at me, and because you know we really focus a lot on the Islanders on this broadcast, is Ryan Strome's brother Dylan Strome. I think he's at what, number six?
Yeah.
What can you tell us about what can you tell us to, what to expect from you know from his play?
Well, Dylan is, you know, he's a great offensive. He's got great offensive potential. The only downside with him right now compared to her older brother Ryan is Dylan needs to work a little bit more on his skating. And what I mean by that is when he's pushing off his first two steps, it has to be better and it has to be faster to play at the pro level. And it's good enough for junior right now. He plays a lot in the shadow of Connor McDavid because they play in the same junior team in the OHL.
Are they on the same line, or do you know, or are they?
They're both centers.
They're both centers. Okay.
Yeah, but sometimes they're out there in the power play unit together, even if they're both centers.
Mm-hmm.
They play in the same power play unit. But that being said about his skating, that's something that he will overcome. He will get better at that. He needs to get stronger as well. I mean, players at that age, all players at that age, have to get bigger and stronger because when you go to the pro level, it's just like when they come into junior from minor or midget or bantam, it's totally different. The speed of the game is faster. The thinking and decisions have to be made at a higher level, and it'll be the same case for him when he goes to the pro level. You must get stronger, faster to deal with bigger players to win puck battles. He definitely has the ability to be a top six forward at the next level, at the pro level. There's no doubt about that, just like his brother Ryan. I mean, he creates opportunities for his line mates. As you know, he is a tenacious forechecker, and he hates losing the puck, so he will battle hard to get it back. That's how tenacious he is, and he brings a lot of energy to the game.
Now, again, just going, just switching over to Eichel, I mean, I've seen some stuff on him, and I've heard that he is just a monster. And I'm looking at actually at the chart, and he's not any much bigger than a Connor McDavid. He's listed at 6'2", 195. But is it just the matter of the fact of the difference between maybe playing in the OHL as a playing into the U.S. college hockey market, that he's just playing a much bigger size, or it appears to be a bigger size because of the fact that I think that it tends to be the U.S. college hockey market tends to be a smaller market as far as player size and power is concerned?
Well, I don't want to intimate anything at all, if your listeners are listening, that I think that Eichel is going to be number two. We have Connor McDavid right now as number one. That could change by the end of the season. But they definitely, anybody that drafts number one or number two, whoever gets either of these players are going to have a franchise player, and they're going to be a staple in their lineup. I mean, as you remarked about him playing U.S. college, I don't think that has anything really to do with it. It depends on the players and player. I know that there's been comparisons. Well, you know, a major junior, you play almost like a pro schedule. You play 72 games plus playoffs. And U.S. college, I know they may play half that.
Right.
But I think in some respects, NHL GMs and coaches and scouts like to have players that play at the U.S. college level because they're more adapted to playing against men as you have junior players that start off their careers, most of them, with some exceptions. There are some in the OHL that start like Tavares did, Ekblad, and McDavid at 15, but most of them start at 16, whether they play in the WHL, OHL, or Quebec League.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to the NCAA level, you're playing, those players are playing mostly 18 through 23.
It's
and they need to play against men. They're more. What I'm trying to say is they're getting more NHL or pro ready at that level because they're playing against players that are bigger and stronger already. But you know, Eichel is a pure sniper. I mean, he has the speed and the size to drive to the net. He has a good reach with his stick, and he's hard to contain. Very hard to contain. I mean, I'll just give you an example. Earlier this year. This season, in a game, in a tournament, I believe it was a tournament against the Maine Black Bears. He scored the tying goal, and he also got the winning goal on an end-to-end rush mm-hmm. in overtime.
That's what
and
I heard. That's what I heard about him. Yep.
Yeah. This guy's got the ability to be a game changer, and he's a sniper. And you have to pay attention on the ice when he's out there because he will burn you if you don't.
Now, everybody, you know, obviously talks about Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. How is there anybody else in this draft who might be, you know, sort of the dark horse? You know, I've heard so many different opinions of what this draft's going to be that it, you know, some people have said, well, you got number one and two, and then the rest, and then some other people have said, well, actually, it's a pretty deep draft, and you may get, you know, quality players as far down as 10. So who are some of the other names of people we should be aware of, guys who might really be sort of that steal?
Well, let's take a look at number three first, because he plays in the Northeast there, in the East Coast, and he plays in the university across town from Jack Eichel. He plays at Boston College, and that's defenseman Noah Hanifin. People who are not aware of Noah Hanifin, when he played in the tournament at the World Juniors at Christmas time, I mean, he had an outstanding tournament, I thought. A lot of people thought he didn't, but I thought he did. I thought he handled the puck very well. He's an offensive-type defenseman, and he will join the rush. He has just got a bullet of a shot. He doesn't get caught out of position very often, Gary. He reads plays really well, reacts. He's just an excellent skater, not afraid physically. Although, he is an offensive type of guy, though, and that's what he looks for first to set up plays. But, I mean, he's another guy that rushes the puck really well. He is, in my opinion, he is a number one, number two type pairing on defense, and he will be for whoever team drafts him. It'll take some time. He's not going to probably not jump into the lineup right away, but it might depend on the team who drafts him. But, I mean, you've seen the experiment out west, and I don't want to knock on the organization of Edmonton, but they've drafted a lot of first-rounders, but a lot of the times, too, that they're just not ready to play in the NHL at that level. They should have had more seasoning down in the AHL, and this is what's the result of it, isn't it? And there may be no fault of their own. They had to put these players in the lineup right away and get them in front of their fans, they thought. But, I mean, this is the thing. If you take time with a player like Noah Hanifin, he is going to be a benefit to whoever drafts him.
Could you just in expounding to that thing, I was just going to bring that up too about, you know, a team like the Edmonton Oilers, who obviously has had, you know, so many number one picks: Neil Yakupov, Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent Hopkins. They had Justin Schultz. They've had a tremendous amount of players, especially at the forward position. Could it be that a scouting staff, and again, you know, with your experience dealing with scouting and reporting, could it be that, you know, they're just looking at that particular player and not necessarily looking at it for a team aspect? Because to me, when you got a Taylor Hall, you got a Ryan Nugent Hopkins, they're not tremendously different types of players. You know, is it just that a team will just look for the best player at that position, regardless of the fact whether it could be getting a similar talented person, you know, with the next pick?
Oh, absolutely, Gary. I think that's what a lot of what dictated what has gone on the last few years with the Oilers. They basically, I think, had the mantra of we're just going to take the best available player. And this is no knock against somebody. I'm going to give you an example of the draft of Neil Yakupov. They had another young player out west here that was highly ranked. He was drafted by the Columbus Blue Jackets. You might know the name Ryan Murray.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he played with the Everett Silvertips, so I'm well aware of, because I covered the WHL.
Right.
And a lot of people were thinking, you know, well, the Oilers previously drafted Hall. They had Eberle in the lineup Nugent Hopkins. So maybe it's time. Maybe they'll take Ryan Murray. Somebody on defense, they need some help on defense. Well, they did not. They went ahead and drafted Neil Yakupov, who was slightly ranked ahead of Ryan Murray. But one has to wonder, you know, is it just strictly the best player, like you were saying, that they were looking at, or should they start looking at players that were going to be more for their need? I thought maybe they would have taken Ryan Murray, but they didn't at that point. I mean, if you look in comparison here, and we're talking about the Islanders here, and I want to stress this. You look at the patience it's taken the Islanders organization from Gar Snow, Coach Jack Capuano, and one of the former scouts that helped draft some of these guys, Ryan Jankowski.
Yep, got to know him very well.
Yeah, Ryan's now to leave the Team Canada scouting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time, because we're talking prospects, but I want to give the Islanders a little bit of credit for some of the players they drafted. Brock Nelson, you know, 2010 first rounder, 30th overall, he's in their lineup and making a contribution. I mean, nobody has to explain about John Tavares. Everybody knows the success he's had before he came to the Islanders. He was an exception at a 15-year-old. He came out of Oshawa, and now he's the captain and leading this team like he should have. They've had a lot of patience with him. He's had a lot of patience with other players coming on with him. They're finally coming up to speed. Calvin DeHaan, another first-rounder. Kyle Okposo, Ryan Strome. I can go down the list. Josh Bailey, Casey Cizikas. They're all making contributions.
Well, the two things I was just going to actually add on that, especially with the Islanders, especially we all know in the case of Josh Bailey, that Gar Snow not only dropped once, but dropped twice to get him. He went down from 5 to 9 to get him. And at that draft party, I remember everybody was going crazy over this Russian player named Nikita Filatov. And everyone said he had to be here. He was going to be the next superstar. Where is he now?
Where is he now?
You know, and, exactly. And that's the one thing. And then, again, I think what Garcinoe has preached, and I've gotten to talk, we've had him on the show a few times, and he prefers, you know, he's not necessarily looking for that best player. He's looking for the quality type person in regard to his play, in addition to his play, that'll make that person fit in the locker room and do things that other players just won't do. And to me, the example that comes to mind, especially because he's been on a tear lately, is Anders Lee. 18 goals as a rookie, came out of Notre Dame. I think he was drafted in the sixth round.
He was.
And that's the type of guy that, you know, that I've seen has worked perfectly in that Islander locker room. And he just fits the mold to a T. And those are the types of guys that that Garth's getting. Another one that you look at is Travis Hamonic, a second-round pick out of Brandon. And I don't know, many people had him on the radar, and everybody said, oh, he's not going to turn out to anything. And to me, he goes to war with this team, and those are the guys you got to love, you know, as an NHL fan.
Well, I know your previous guest, Glenn Healy, we know each other well. And we get people get hung up on analytics, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to him because I heard he calls it analytics. I think he called it that on Hockey Night in Canada last week, and I unfortunately didn't get to talk to him about that.
Well, we come from the same mantra. I don't go there. Yes, of course, statistics are important to an extent. They're not the be-it-all, end-all. I watch WHL players all the time. I watch BCHL players. I watch university players that play in the NCAA, United States Hockey. I travel. I can tell you, it's not only the people that are putting up points. You need quality character players. You need players that can play at the NHL level that not only are going to be scoring goals, they're going to play in your third and your fourth line. They're going to prevent goals. And the Islanders this year have got players that are playing both ends of the ice. They're playing roles. They're role players on the team. I mean, Franz Nielsen is one. Casey Cizikas. Thomas Hickey finally getting a chance. Good to see. Former first rounder by the LA Kings. Islanders took a chance on him.
Right. That's
playing great.
Yeah, he is. He's doing very well. I mean, he plays a lot bigger than his diminutive size shows. And again, that's what you're looking for. And again, I have the pleasure of getting to go cover the team and go in the locker room and stuff. And it's amazing. It's like 20 best friends in the room. And that's exactly what Garth wanted. And that's exactly what he's getting. So in the last couple of minutes we got with you, Randy, just give us a little bit of a taste of, because obviously if I saw correctly, and I know we friended on Facebook, you know, being a scout is not your main role in life. So how do you juggle the fact of doing your regular work and getting in the time to be a scout and what you get to cover and what assignments you get to do?
Well, I got an incredibly good leeway with my main employer, which allows me to go and travel because this is a part-time gig. I'm not a full-time NHL scout. Mm-hmm. I work for an independent, which is McKean's. There's
right.
Four main ranking services. Of course, Central Scouting is the main one by the NHL, but there's McKean's Scouting, and of course, I won't mention the other two, but I mean, there's four of us.
Don't worry, we support you, Randy. No problem.
But no, I get a chance to see over 250 games a year, not just in the Vancouver area. I have to go down to Portland. I have to go to Everett. I got to go through the Cascade Mountains. I got to go to Western Canada, and then I have to make some trips out east too for NCAA because we don't have NCAA out in this area. So
right.
But it
sounds like a labor of love, though.
That's right. In fairness, I have to see all these players. If you're going to do the job as a scout and fully evaluate and do the proper due diligence, NHL scouts do it all the time. I have to do the same thing.
Right.
Well, look, I'm currently looking for permanent employment, so, you know, if you got a connection, let me know.
I'm
sure Claire would
love
that.
You anytime.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, Randy, we really appreciate you spending a little bit of time and talking to us about the draft and what's been going on, and definitely we will keep you in the loop, especially when June comes.
Draft time.
We definitely are going to want to, you know, last year we always were talking about high draft picks, but, you know, hopefully we're drafting 30th this year.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be a good year for two out of the three New York area teams.
Exactly, exactly. Well, listen, we really appreciate you spending the time, and enjoy the rest of the hockey season, okay?
You both do as well, and like I said, it was great to be able to come on.
Absolutely. Thanks, we'll catch you on the road. Thanks, Randy. All right, so that was Randy Gorman from McKee's Scouting. And, again, it's going to be an interesting draft. And, again, it's one of those drafts, John, that we're not going to have to really worry.
Yeah, for once, and, it's going to be different.
Exactly. So we got about 3 minutes or so. Again, we can't thank Glenn Healy enough for coming on. It was, when I started doing this, I said, I've got to get him. I've got to get him on. And, like I said, Glenn, I'm wearing a 35 proudly, no tomato stains, blood and all. but I really appreciate him coming on. We're back on again, I believe, on March 22nd is our next show.
Right.
So I am working the phones. I am hoping to get a Vancouver-based show next time. I have approached Trevor Linden. I have also approached Lauren Henning, being I'm calling Vancouver again. Lauren Henning was the second assist on the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you're at the Coliseum, stop by Gate 17 at the Booster Club. We are actually helping sell prints of a lithograph called The Goal, which if you see when you walk down the lower concourse, it's that big poster that's there of Bobby Nystrom's, of course, game-winning goal in 1980. So we're helping sell some posters. So definitely stop by. Even on the Ranger game tomorrow night, and take a look. But, John, tomorrow's a big night.
Yep.
I know you're
going
to be glued to the set. I'm going to be in my seat getting concerned, and hopefully the real team pops out for tomorrow night's game.
Yeah, we can't play like we have the last four. The Rangers are going to steamroll.
No, I mean, thank God they've gotten the 8 points in the four games, but, this one means a lot more. And obviously they go on the road again tomorrow, and next Saturday I'll be in Washington to see the Islanders take on the Caps, which will be a lot of fun. My first road trip in a long, long time. So we got another minute. Again, John, great show as always. I thank you very much. Make sure you stay tuned to Sports Talk 1240 in the second hour. Andrew Joseph is coming on. He's got a couple of guests talking about the state of New York sports, and we hope you check them out. So Anyway, thank you to Randy. Thank you to Glenn Healy for Sports Talk 1240. John, thank you as always. Joe, thank you for bringing John here as always. This is Gary Harding. And again, in the words of my good buddy Bill Hayes, keep skating, everybody. And make sure you stay tuned. Sports Talk 1240 WGBB.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.